Good morning and welcome to The Protector Show with security expert Ed Johnston. During the show, Ed and his guests will be discussing ways to stay safe at home, at the office, online, even in your vehicle. Ed's website is apisecurity.us and you can reach his office directly at 614-310-1980. Thank you for listening to The Protector Show and welcome to the first episode of The Protector Show with security expert Ed Johnston. This is Adam Lepp from WWGH Radio. Over the next 45 minutes, we will discuss ways to keep you and your family safe at home, at work, online, even in your car. Security is a topic that seems to increase in importance every day, and we are pleased to present this new and important show. The host of the show has been in the security business longer than I can remember, probably 25 or 30 years, but he will explain that in more detail. His name is Ed Johnston, and we call him the protector around here at the station. He is the owner, general manager of API Security, which has been in business, again, 25 to 30 years. And they provide a wide range of security services, background checks, investigations that Ed will explain in more detail. So without further ado, I'd like to proudly introduce the host of this important new show here on The Talking Place, Ed Johnston. Ed, kind of chilly here today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Adam, and thanks for that nice introduction. And I know we've known each other for that long, and believe it or not, I've been in the criminal justice career for 40 years. And during those 40 years, I've been very fortunate to work within the public and private sector. And each area is a little bit unique, and what I want the listeners to understand is that we're going to have topics that will hopefully relate to you. And these topics can range from personal protection to how do we protect your home and or business. The interesting part of my career in the public sector has been that no day is a similar type of day. There's always something new going on and something that needs to be addressed within the criminal justice part. Being a police officer for over 30 years, I have found that being on both sides of the fence helps individuals to understand why a police officer does what they do and what I do to help individuals on a daily basis. The office, API's office, is located in Worthington, but I have Marion connections that go all the way back to my family. My dad grew up in Marion, and I know that there's a number of relatives still in Marion, and my grandmother grew up in Marion, the Kearns and the Johnstons. And I hope that some family members will take something away from this. And that's what this show is all about, is protecting our families and our loved ones, and or how do we better protect ourselves, especially with the everyday changing of how scams happen or with how people usually are victims of crime. And so more about myself, being in the Worthington area, growing up in Worthington, having a family and grandkids, it's even more so for us to understand the fears or the non-fears of what knowledge can bring us. And with this show, I'd like to hear from you. With that, you can send information to it's info@apisecurity.us or give me a call at 614-310-1980. And I'd like to hear from you, the listeners, of some of the things that you would like to hear from the program. Once again, Adam, thanks for having me join this weekly radio broadcast.
It's our pleasure, Ed. I think this is one of the exciting new shows that we've been hinting about for 2018. We'll have some interesting guests from the community, and we invite listeners to provide their feedback, or even if you'd like to be a guest or have a question that we can answer on the air, that's great. Again, Ed gave his email address. You can always email me directly at adam@wwgh1071.com. Ed, I apologize, because you know how I am about arithmetic and numbers. I seem to have underestimated the amount of time you've been in law enforcement. 40 years is quite a long time. We've seen a lot of changes since the late 70s. What was your first job in law enforcement?
It was actually in retail, catching shoplifters, working undercover. And I started at Sears, Roebuck & Company, and from there I went on to Columbus State to obtain my associate degree, and at The Ohio State University with my bachelor's degree, and within AIU with my master's in education. Another passion of mine is teaching, being able to teach at the vocational level, private security level, corporate Fortune 500 companies with workplace violence, to the college, community college levels, teaching juvenile delinquency of all topics.
Well, that certainly must be interesting and probably very rewarding also.
It has been, to the point that within the classes themselves that I've been able to teach and learn from my students different aspects of what they've gone through, or with how they can better live their lives in more of a safe environment.
Ed, the first thing that went through my mind, as you know, sometimes I kind of operate like several computer chips with an extra hard drive thrown in. Anyway, when you started back at Sears, when they were still called Sears Roebuck, they weren't part of Kmart and they were flourishing. Unfortunately, Sears is going through a rough time right now, but I think they'll pull through. Just the name alone has so much appeal and so much history. Anyway, back in the late 70s, Ed, when you were going undercover at Sears to catch shoplifters, the technology has obviously changed. There was no Facebook and social media. The cameras obviously were lower tech. They were more expensive. They were slower. The pictures weren't as high quality. What do you think are some of the differences? I mean, there are, we could spend a whole week's worth of shows on this, but what are the main differences between the way a store like Sears, or you know, again, Walmart, Meijer, Kroger, would catch shoplifters when you started back in the late 70s versus the way that it's being done now?
Well, what's phenomenal, Adam, about technology today versus in the 70s, most retailers had lookout points. And I remember many times being at a lookout point, kind of catching that shoplifter, versus today with how cameras have developed. There's actually smart cameras out there that will kind of catch an eye on a particular segment of the population of shoppers, and kind of there's more cameras than usually shoppers now in most stores, and the technology is phenomenal with how it can kind of pan into a particular area and see what's going on. The neat thing about within our business is we have that same technology, and that's what kind of brings me to my part of understanding of where I came from, of being on those lookout points, now being able to share with anyone the capability of electronics, that even from a remote standpoint on your phone, you can actually monitor your home or business and be able to pan and tilt and zoom into those particular areas that you want to see what's going on. With smart technology, even from 15 years ago, where it would probably cost you for a smart home between $10,000 to $15,000, now for several thousand dollars, you can almost have a smart home with between Google and with Amazon or with Alexa. And that's where the technology is changing so quickly and trying to stay up. It's exciting for me to kind of understand where this technology is going to.
Ed, the obvious difference is the technology and the cost and the quality. That just getting a regular smartphone that you stick in your pocket that's exposed to all kinds of weather, you probably dropped it a few times. Probably not handling it as gently as you should. Still takes a great photo and great video. Better quality than cameras costing four or five figures back when you started in security in the late 70s or early 80s. One question I have, though, Ed, obviously no piece of technology is as smart as a smart human being. Nothing beats experience or, again, the education that someone like yourself brings to the table. Do we still have people undercover who do go to Walmart and Kroger looking for shoplifters, or is it now mostly done through these cameras and these smart cameras?
Well, either way, with technology, you still have to have individuals that basically it's just a part of their toolbox, the cameras are, and that you have individuals that still kind of make those decisions on what needs to happen. And even into the public police world, where now we have body cameras. And before that, we had cameras and audio within the police cars. And I remember when that first came out, that was a change of how police officers worked within the field and how that technology helped being able to reaffirm what we saw out there in the field. And that's what's interesting about the technology itself, is that you still have that human piece. One day we won't have that human piece, and we're already talking about that with driverless cars. But I think either way, we will still have that human piece within the technology.
So we would definitely be in accord in saying that no piece of smart technology, at least as we go into 2018, is as smart or as experienced or has the instinct of a smart person. You know, someone like yourself with 40 years employment in business ownership in security and police work, and you've taught, you have a master's degree. It's pretty hard for any computer or robot to offer an iota of what someone like yourself would. But obviously technology is important.
Technology and common sense go hand in hand.
I would definitely agree. Ed, before we discuss some tips on online security, there's been a major news story in Marion, and this kind of thing happens almost everywhere. But it's making a lot of headlines here in the great city of Marion, and I think it's quite important. We don't want anybody to get scammed this time of year. It's cold. Utility bills are up. We're still paying for holiday bills. Of course, we have taxes due, etc. We don't need any more financial problems. The Marion County Sheriff's Office has received information from many residents in our area that they are receiving phone calls where the caller is trying to get personal information, which might include a credit card or debit card number, social security number, date of birth, asking the victim, the person that's being called, to buy a reloadable Visa card, such as a Green Dot, that you can get at most discount in department stores in the area. That if you don't report for jury duty, you will be in very big trouble, which might include sending money to avoid a fine. As you know, Ed, as a citizen, as a business owner, this kind of stuff is obviously fake. And the perpetrators, they're the ones who are criminals. As I like to say, if it smells like a rat, it probably is. To me, it seems very obvious, but that's based on my knowledge and training experience in security and knowing what's real and what isn't. When you first heard this story, Ed, what was kind of going through your head? And what are some tips for our listeners to avoid these fake phone calls? And how should we investigate someone who claims that there's money owed or that there is something going on that the person being called has to know about?
In teaching identity theft for a number of years to seniors, one interesting question I would ask the general audience is, how many credit cards do you have in your wallet? And usually most participants would say between 2 to 4 credit cards. And I said, well, what's the highest amount you may have in your wallet? And one individual said, I have a credit card that I can spend up to $100,000. when I basically shared that that $100,000 could be spent within 2 minutes, that participant was very shocked to understand that where identity theft is not just beyond with what you work with, Adam, every day in the web and into the electronic world, but it's also within telephone scamming. And like I share with most participants is that, you know, when our loved ones get older, and we're all caring as individuals, that we need to take several additional steps to protect our loved ones by reassuring and or protecting them in the area of these basic tips. Number one is first choose every year who you will contribute any kind of monetary donations to. Stick with those individuals that you know that you have checked out, that you care, and that you want to help. Number two is that any time that anyone solicits any type of information about you or wanting a donation from you over the phone, that no law enforcement or state agency will do that. They will send you information via through email or through mail, depending upon what that agency is. But like anything, verify that information before any of your personal information is ever given. The majority of time, no one from any agency will ask you for personal information, not even a bank, over a telephone. It's so important that you protect your information that you just need to say no, simply no, to those individuals that's trying to gather that information, and that you want additional questions answered before you go to that next step. Those are some of the basic highlights that I usually share.
This is one of many examples, Ed, of phone scams. People know that you don't receive a jury summons or a notice of failing to appear by a phone call, and then you're kind of hustled for a credit card or debit card number. To me, it seems obvious, but not everybody is as experienced as we are. And don't be afraid to ask this caller how they got your number, why they're calling, why they are using a non-traditional method of requesting this payment, why they're requesting payment at all. Oftentimes, a caller will just hang up and try to scam somebody else, and hopefully they'll get caught before anybody is harmed, and that is harmed financially, but also harmed emotionally. I've certainly gotten calls saying that their Microsoft and my computer is infected. They need me to pay $179 and to log into it. We've gotten calls saying it's the IRS, so we owe taxes, etc. In the information age where it's easy to find people's phone numbers and contact information, it's made these scammers, it's put that carrot, I guess, in front of these scammers. And it's like, well, they're tempted to do this, knowing that if 1 out of 1,000 people that they call, and again, versus the way it was 20 or 30 years ago, it doesn't really cost anything to call California or to call someone in the same town. The cost of phone calls is become essentially zero in many cases. You can use a Google Voice number, for example, versus when I was a kid, it cost 60 cents a minute to call California, and that was in dollars from 40 years ago. So with the cost of phone calls versus the cost of printing and mailing something, it's easy for these scammers to pick up the phone, find somebody to scam, no other way to say it. And if 1 out of 1,000 people takes the bait and they're able to rip that person off, and that scammer is successful, and it's really kind of sad. So bottom line is, check out anything. Ask every question that you can. A legitimate company will not be offended. In fact, they'll actually be impressed that you're asking why they're calling and what they're calling about or requesting additional information. And also, the more successful that these scammers are, the more that they will flourish. So we want to stop them, in their tracks. Anything to add to that, Ed? Does that kind of sum it up?
It does. I mean, like anything, it's just common sense, and just like anything, need to continue sharing to the general public common sense methods and being able to protect yourself.
And we want to talk about online security and security on the internet. Of course, that kind of touches on it. But there are many different sides to this issue. Before we do that, we mentioned your company, API Security. Tell us again how long you've been in business and the range of services that you provide. And also, we talked about you do detective work and investigations. How important are those types of investigations in the information age?
Well, the neat thing about API, we've just gone into our 27th year. And with that, we have three different divisions. The first one is the electronic piece of it, camera systems, security systems. We have GPS that can track, even to the point where we even have personal help I can't get up type of units. And the neat thing about our unit is by one press of a button, on top of if a loved one is missing, they can have two-way conversation with the central station anywhere beyond the home, number one. But number two is you can get online now and see where that GPS unit is and be able to respond instead of waiting to try to respond to your loved one. That's one of the neatest technologies that we've come out with in this last year. When you're talking about the investigative world, the neat thing about investigations is it's widespread, from corporate workers' comp to internal theft, external theft, to surveillance. And nothing ever gets solved within 30 minutes. It does take a lot longer than what a TV program would ever show. But the neat thing about investigations is visit our website, and there's a whole list of what we do within investigations. Last is uniform. Over the Christmas rush, we were up at the Meijer store doing security there, and so we have uniformed and patrol services. Anything that you need a security person for, we can help. And sometimes even from a domestic standpoint, between having a uniformed officer to an investigator, we work within all those areas, and they work hand in hand. We're all licensed and certified through Homeland Security, and so anyone that you're working with is Homeland carded, or that would also be past criminal justice or current being a police officer like myself. Website is apisecurity.us. We also have on Facebook, if you want to kind of follow us there, is API Security Service at apiservices.inc. No, I'm sorry, API Services, Inc. And then even Twitter, if you want to, we're at Edward Johnston at apisecurity.us. So from a media standpoint, we're out there, and we're typically sharing stuff with what's going on into our world every day.
So just like our president, you tweet, and that's one of many ways to communicate with our customers, our friends, and our community members.
Yes, very much.
So I guess I was right when I mentioned how long you've been in business. I said 25 to 30 years, and I was about right, 27. So, you know, I'm a stickler for arithmetic, so get at least an A-minus on that one.
That's true.
Interestingly, Ed, you and I have worked together, and reminds me how long I've been in business. For about half that time, probably 13, 14 years, that I've been the webmaster and email provider and computer fix-it man and question answerer. I guess that's a word. One thing that's important in this topic of online security and safety using the internet is pick a company that you're comfortable with. And obviously, someone that you've worked with for 12, 15 years, more than likely you have a good relationship, not only as business associates, but as friends. I mean, we're friends, and that's I think, one of the most important parts of our business relationship. In those 12 to 15 years, Ed, that we've done business together, how much do you think the fact that we've gone through trials and tribulations, many issues with email and computer upgrades and some website upgrades and taking a look at how to take payments online. We were allowing information on classes that your company is offering, not just the information, but the ability to pay for and register them online. How has that further cemented our relationship and just made both of us a better company?
Well, when you're talking about the internet or websites, I go all the way back to 1996 with my first website. And what was interesting was I actually had a contact from Sweden that wanted us to do an investigation in Columbus. And when we're talking about our relationship, Adam, that, like you said, with changes and with what we're doing, what's interesting is how many different generations we're working between now. And believe it or not, there's five generations that are living all at the same time for the first time. And each one has its own little interesting history or story with the five generations. When we're talking about currently with the online and with how we're doing business, I guess we can kind of thank the millennials because that's the direction that they're going. And more so than ever, being able to understand that and also understand the fallbacks to the internet and to being online, there's pros and cons to that. And I think that's what you were sharing earlier was some of the changes that we've gone through in the last 10-plus years.
When you pick a company to do business with, Ed, I mean, I'm talking about not just your internet provider, but your custodial help, someone to fix your car, and obviously someone whose life you put in your hands, your physician. What are some tips in choosing these people, and how important is a background check? For example, do you think a background check should be done on any service provider?
Well, just like ourselves, talking to the Better Business Bureau, a couple of weeks ago, they said you had over 100 inquiries last year, and it seems like that's the norm. And I said, well, that's good. That's what people and businesses should do, is obviously check those basic areas before you just make a decision that maybe you're going to kind of say, well, why didn't I do these particular checks and balances? When we talk about relationships with background checks, anymore, it would be nice to think that everybody has a clean record and everyone has the right purpose on why there's a relationship. So on investigations, even today on a domestic, it's like, well, did you check out your former wife's boyfriend? And, you know, because if your child is with that person, it would be good to know who that person really is. And so those basic things are very important to be able to, just from a conscious standpoint, and being able to say, okay, I did everything possible to protect myself or others. That's what this is all about.
So, Ed, a legitimate provider will not be afraid if you ask him or her a question about background. It doesn't offend me, and I want someone to be comfortable, and I have nothing to hide. I mean, my police record is extremely boring. Probably could cover it in about 45 seconds, and I guess that's good. That's something that you want to be boring. I hate to do a little horn tooting, I guess that's the term, Ed, but you and I have done business for a long time. As a security professional, I don't think you do business with anybody you're not comfortable with. What is it about my company that you like that's caused you to do business with me for such a long time?
Well, Adam, the basics is that you are always prompt. You are normally available, being able to have those conversations in any time period. And that, like anything, there's a comfort zone and there's an understanding. And that's where it's at is, you know, who do you really feel comfortable in working with?
I guess a little horn tooting is okay. So the fact that I'm available. And I tell it like it is. I'm not afraid to tell you I don't agree with something. You know, that's happened a couple times, and we try to grow our businesses, and I think we respect each other, and that's probably a good thing. And I guess one thing that's where I'm a little curious about is you still do some police work on the side. And tell us about the rewarding parts of being a police officer, and just tell maybe some inside information for our listeners. There is so much misinformation about the police business right now, and as you know, it's been in the news quite a bit. What's your main impression as someone with a background in police work, and maybe any inside information you can share with our listeners about the day-to-day aspects of this kind of work?
Being a police officer has always been rewarding to myself. From the general standpoint of foot and vehicle patrol to meeting people and helping people in general, the changes that's happened in the last few years with police officers, and I can even feel the stress level itself is that there was a change in respect. There's a change in understanding. And we've seen that play out on the media, and this core sense of, if nothing else, the general public should take away is, as these individuals that are serving our community, police officers, men and women, they care. They want to make a difference. And all we can ever do is to hopefully continue with that level of respect and understanding in the general public. The biggest thing is we're all human. We all can make mistakes. But for the most part, I think we try to do what's right. And at times, those snaps, quick decisions can be right or wrong. And it just goes back to, you know, who we are as individuals.
So, Ed, you would still advise a person who's interested in police work to move forward, that that is a good line of work. Certainly, there will be controversy. People will love you. People will hate you. But when you go home at night and hang up your hat, you understand how important your job is and how you've served society, how you've maybe saved a life, maybe made somebody's life better. And it still is a good line of work.
Very much so. I know in the last year or two, there's been a decrease in individuals wanting to go into police work. We still have a lot of good military people that's coming out that want to continue in their careers. But like with anything, we as a community still have to make that difference. And the only difference we can make is to be able to step up and say, okay, this can be a dangerous job, but I can make a difference in my community. And I think that's where I've always kind of stood within my life, is being able to say I can make a difference in my community.
Would you advise someone a younger person who might be considering a job as a police officer, again, test the waters, get a job as a security guard, as like what you did at Sears, an ununiformed shopper who's actually been watching over, maybe sell security equipment, maybe if you're technologically oriented, do some online work or of some kind, investigations, or maybe work in some capacity for a security company, just to see how the inner workings are. Now, would that give someone a better taste of what this kind of job entails?
What I typically do within teaching, and usually at the vocational level, was to give those students the opportunity to understand all the different levels of what the criminal justice jobs can be. And what's been fortunate for myself is that working in retail, working in industrial, working as a consultant, working as a police officer, it's given me this overview of understanding of all the different types of jobs. I believe we all have to have a passion. We all have to have that purpose in our lives. And that's what kind of carries us through any kind of career. In this day and age, you're going to change jobs multiple times. It's just the way where we are within our within our lives. The neat thing about our company is you can look at all those different areas, and we are hiring, and you're welcome to on our website. We have an application, and you can call our office supervisor, Mr. Wenard, and that's W-E-N-A-R, and speak to him, fill out an application, and see if that would be a good beginning point for you. But with what you shared earlier, Adam, is yes, you know, at least try to look at a job, see if it's something for you. Go into the vocational school. Check out all the different types of careers that maybe that they offer within the junior, senior level. That's all important to be able to get to those stepping stones. You can make a difference by just you investing in your own education and learning at this point.
Yes, the unique thing about police work, Adam, this applies to any job, but for some reason it seems to have a big impact on police work, is the diversity. As we're seeing more females as police officers, the police chief of Columbus is a female, which I think is outstanding. I mean, it's cool, but she was also the most qualified applicant. Her being a female was very little to do with receiving that job. But regardless of your age, your background, education, or even if you have police officers or security professionals in your family, and if you're a male or a female, if you're interested in something like police or detective work, go for it.
Absolutely. In the field of law enforcement, over the last 30 years, I've worked with a lot of great professionals. And like anything, it's ever-changing, and it will continue to change, and that's a good thing.
We want to talk more about online security. Certainly, Ed, as long as we've known each other, and my interest in what you do, again, we could spend five shows talking about police work and how things have changed as you've been in business. But the important topic of online security and this jury duty scam certainly brings that to light. We've all received what are called phishing emails, emails that claim to be from your bank or, again, from the IRS, from the people at the county with jury duty, because this occurs through email also, saying that they need your credit card number, social security number, anything to get into your account, a login and password, for example, and all they're going to do is steal your money, and it could cost you a lot of money. And even if you manage to get any charges reversed that might occur, you're still going through a lot of headaches, and it can certainly affect your credit rating, and out of nothing else, waste a lot of your time. And online security is just so important. Ed, even though you're in law enforcement, you're not immune to getting these emails. I mean, you certainly receive emails claiming to be from your bank, the IRS, et cetera. When you receive these messages, do you get angry that there's someone out there who is going to be gullible? Are you angry at the perpetrators of these messages? What's kind of your main thought when you get these messages yourself or someone in your family does?
Well, from an emotional standpoint, it's more of a common sense standpoint. You just have to, once again, take each email, verify it, and or just don't, like open attachments. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Sometimes some of this phishing stuff is just opening up an attachment. If you don't know who the email's from, don't open the attachment. From a phishing standpoint of people are asking for personal information, delete it or block it or report it as a report it to whoever your provider is that, you know, this is a phishing method. Those are just some of the common sense things, Adam.
Your bank will never email you asking for a password or your account number. They know your account number. They're the ones that assigned it to you.
That's correct, yes.
But again, many people, that they see something that says it's the IRS, that it's their bank, that it's the police department. Suddenly their blood pressure goes up a little bit. They get nervous and say, well, I have to reply to this or I could go to jail. And these emails can sound very legitimate, just like this phone call about having to pay because you skipped jury duty. But again, take a deep breath, take a look at the message, and understand that 99.99% of the time, it is a scam. And if you're not sure, don't be afraid. You know, the only stupid question is the question not asked, as my mom always said. Don't be afraid to call your friendly neighborhood internet provider, you know, like myself, or your friendly neighborhood security company person, like Ed, and ask. I mean, more than likely, we will confirm that it's a scam, but better to be embarrassed on a 15-second phone call than suffer identity theft and hours of time and possibly a lot of money digging out of a hole that some scammer put you in. So kind of sum it up, Ed, or any more advice? I think this is such an important topic. We have to let people know that there are scammers out there. The cost to send an email is nothing versus, you know, 49 cents for a stamp and the printing and having to drop a letter in the mailbox. So the temptation to these scammers to send out these emails, make these telephone calls, which essentially costs them nothing. If 1 out of 1,000 people that receive this message, you know, bites, is gullible, and sends the money, provides the login information, provides a credit card number, that scammer is successful.
I think, like anything, education is well worth investing into, and with that is, go on the internet and ask, you know, what are the biggest scams going on today, and you'll probably get a number of different articles out of that by itself. Sometimes even YouTube now is phenomenal with what you can learn. Train, teach, learn what you can, so then you're more confident in being able to address things that with what you mentioned, Adam.
Another scam would be the messaging scam, where you get a message on Facebook from one of your friends saying, "Hi, this is Mark," meaning Zuckerberg, the director of Facebook or CEO of Facebook, owner of Facebook, whatever they claim that he is. Facebook will start charging next week. Go ahead and pay some money now to reserve your place, or you have to go ahead and verify your password. And you think, well, it came from one of my friends. My friend is not Mark Zuckerberg, so what's going on? Well, that person got a similar message, clicked on a link, and his or her Facebook app or browser got infected, and now this stuff is being sent out. And so if you get one of those, just go ahead and close it. I'm sure your friend already knows that his or her account has been compromised, but you may want to go ahead and give that person a phone call. And don't use Messenger, because that person may have an infected account. Literally, just use the old-fashioned method. Call the person, or if the person's a roommate or family member or neighbor, knock on the door. You know, we still do that from time to time. We actually knock on doors and talk to people like we did back in the old days. And then, anyway, let that person know that he or she had sent an infected message. And if it's not already being addressed, please take care of it soon before someone with less insight than yourself falls for it, clicks on it, and who knows what might happen. Another thing are the faked Facebook accounts, where you get a friend request from somebody who's already on your list. It's actually a hacker who may have logged into that person's account or is stealing the photo. And that could end up where you receive some infected messages, or the person tries to get access to your account. Many, many different scenarios. Again, just use your judgment, your common sense. Don't let that chill go through your bones if you get something saying it's Mark Zuckerberg, saying it's Bill Gates, saying it's the IRS, your police department, your bank. Take a deep breath. Look at what you got, because more than likely, it is a scam. If your bank wants to reach you, they'll send you a letter. They will call you. They won't go ahead and send you an instant message or some email. That pretty much wrap it up, Ed. Anything you want to add to that little tirade that I made?
Not at all, Adam. I think we covered it pretty good.
Okay, well, I want to thank you, Ed, for providing the first of many shows, which we call The Protector, with security expert Ed Johnston. And today's co-star was yours truly, Adam Lepp. It's my pleasure to produce the show and provide commentary and hopefully some useful information. Before we close, Ed, tell our listeners about how to reach you, both by the web and by telephone and by email.
Once again, by contacting us, it's 614-310-1980. Visit our website at apisecurity.us, www.apisecurity.us, and follow us on Facebook, API Security Service at API Service, Inc. Thanks, listeners, and tuning in to The Protector. Ed Johnston here. Stay safe.
Thank you for listening to The Protector Show with security expert Ed Johnston. Listen every Friday morning between 11:10 a.m. and noon for this important new show here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. For more information on Ed and the show, please visit theprotectorshow.com.